So we're in the season of Epiphany, where we reflect on how the divine nature of Jesus was revealed. And what's interesting is it seems kind of counterintuitive, but since he is divine, Jesus still chooses to come to this world kind of through the margins, right? So he arrives as a helpless baby, kind of grows up in this really, you know, unknown small rural town. And then he spends most of his energy and time caring for the social outcasts. And he even tells his disciples, right, that he makes it a point to say that he came here not to be served, but to serve. And so this morning, I want to look at this idea of what it means to live a life of service, right? So before we jump in, why don't you take a moment just with the person next to you, just what comes to mind when you think about service, right? Maybe kind of maybe something that brings joy, maybe it's something that is a burden, maybe it's complicated for you, but what comes to mind when you think about service, right? I'll give you a moment to do that. All right, how many thoughts do we have out there? Let's throw some things out there. What came to mind when you thought about service? What does that mean to you? Medicine? Medicine for the ego? Okay. It's a good way to treat your ego. Service, yeah. What else came to mind? Delivering relief. So that's what you're offering when you offer service. Helping younger siblings. Good answer. I'm assuming you have a younger sibling. Yeah. Anything else? Obligation. Okay. Definitely can feel that sometimes. A couple summers ago, we took a road trip to Toronto, our family, and we were going to one of Rachel's friend's wedding. And so it was a long trip. And on the way back, I think it was somewhere in Maryland, I think we were at. And it had been already a long stretch. It was towards the end of the day. And everyone was really sick of fast food. So we were really excited when we found this Vietnamese restaurant to stop at. And so it's one where you have to order and pay up front. And so we ordered a ton of food because we were all really hungry. And when I pulled my credit card out, the guy said, no, it's cash only. And so Rachel and I kind of scrounged together. We had like $15, I think, which was way short. And so it turns out that their ATM machine was broken. And then there were no banks nearby. And so I was kind of desperate. I was like, can I just, you know, Venmo, PayPal you some money and then, you know, you can help cover it. And he didn't have either of those. So that was not helpful. And so we ended up having to cut our order down to one bowl of pho and one sandwich for the entire family. Wah, wah. And so, you know, now that I think about it, I'm not sure why we just didn't go somewhere else that took credit card. I think we were all hangry. We just weren't thinking clearly, obviously. But once they brought the food to our table, the guy ended up bringing three extra sandwiches. And we told him, no, that's a mistake. And he's like, no, I'll take care of it. It'll come out of my paycheck. It's fine. And we just kind of looked at each other and we're like, that's so touching, right? And just that's been one of the more memorable moments of an unexpected act of service where we just, you know, had so much gratefulness around. You know, and I think meaningful service, right, comes from and it impacts the heart. You know, tomorrow is when we celebrate and honor the life of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And this is one of his reflections on serving. He said, but recognize that he who is greatest among you shall be your servant. That's the new definition of greatness. Everybody can be great because anyone can serve. You don't have to have a college degree to serve. You don't have to make your subject and verb agree to serve. You only need a heart full of grace, a soul generated by love, and you can be that servant. And so Dr. King is saying that, you know, we all have the capacity to serve. For some of us, it comes a little more naturally. For others of us, you know, it's not maybe our default posture, but we have the capacity to do it. And so people like Dr. King or St. Teresa or even that guy at the restaurant or just people who model a life of service end up inspiring us to try and do the same. And while it can be rewarding to serve others, right, and it also does help sort of confront our selfish tendencies, it can also end up being something that burns us out, right, or ends up leading to resentment sometimes when it might feel like obligation. And so I think many of us have had moments where we've overextended ourselves serving others. And so the question I want to consider is, how are we invited to live a life of service that's sustainable? And it also is connected with what God's doing. And so the text we'll be looking at this morning is Isaiah 49, 1 through 7. And so we start in verse 1. Listen to me, O coastlands. Pay attention, you peoples from far away. The Lord called me before I was born. While I was in my mother's womb, he named me. He made my mouth like a sharp sword. In the shadow of his hand, he hid me. He made me a polished arrow. In his quiver, he hid me away. And he said to me, you are my servant, Israel, in whom I will be glorified. And so just to give a little background, you know, this was written at a time when Israel was in exile. And so a lot of them had been kind of taken away from their homeland. They were forced to live in a foreign country, having to serve people that had just conquered and captured them. And so it's in that context and reality that God is reminding them that they're not forgotten. That in fact, even before they were born, God already knew them. He had intentions for them. And so there's still an invitation for them to live a life of service, even in their circumstance, because that's the calling that they had when they were born. And I think for us, we're also invited to live out our calling that God's already given us. And part of the process of living a life of service includes discerning that call that's been given to us. You know, in Parker Palmer's book, Let Your Life Speak, he reflects on calling and the calling that each of us have. And I think for most of us, though, we grow up and we go through life, and we're being told what we should pursue or what we should become, whether it's from our parents, our friends, maybe our culture tells us that. And so we have all these external voices that end up shaping who we become, how we live, how we serve. And he calls this wearing other people's faces, where we end up kind of ignoring the original calling that we've been given, and instead we start living what other people say our calling should be. This is how he puts it. He says, today I understand vocation or calling quite differently, not as a goal to be achieved, but as a gift to be received. Discovering calling does not mean scrambling towards some prize just beyond my reach, but accepting the treasure of true self I already possess. Calling does not come from a voice out there calling me to become something I'm not. It comes from a voice in here calling me to be the person I was born to be, to fulfill the original selfhood given me at birth by God. And so when we consider the ways that we live a life of service, right, an important piece of that is discerning our calling, right? Discerning the calling God's already given us so that we can serve from an authentic place. Because when we try to serve in a way that isn't really who we are, sometimes that leads to frustration or burnout or resentment. You know, for me, especially early on in my role as a pastor, I was trying to live out the expectation of, you know, how serving had to be maybe grand gestures or solving people's problems or having something profound to say at all times. And because of that, right, I felt like I was never doing enough or that I wasn't doing those things well, because there are people that do those things well. And it wasn't until I did a little introspection and tried to understand and try to separate, like, what the expectation is that people have versus who I really am. And it was through that that I began to discover that even something as small as presence, that's something that I offer well, right? That I can offer a safe, non-anxious presence because I'm able to hold tension well, that I'm able to be comfortable with silence. That's something that I discovered that I was able to do well. And through my experience as a chaplain, that kind of also came to the forefront. And I think that's how I can serve others through my authentic self. And so how do we listen to our lives, right? How do we let our life speak to us in a way that we can discern our calling? This is what Parker Palmer says. He says, how we are to listen to our lives is a question worth exploring. In our culture, we tend to gather information in ways that do not work very well when the source is the human soul. The soul is not responsive to subpoenas or cross-examinations. The soul speaks its truth only under quiet, inviting, and trustworthy conditions. And so maybe a practice we can try that will help facilitate sort of this quiet, inviting space is reflecting on a personal compass. Because a compass is a helpful tool, right? It kind of lets us know what direction we're facing. It kind of gives us the direction we've come from, the direction we're heading towards. And if we apply it to our life, it's actually one way that we can let our life speak back to us to communicate where we are and maybe what our calling is. And so I'll make this available on the website, but let me walk through what this practice looks like. It's something I came across in Helen Sapero's book, which is Journaling as a Spiritual Practice. So there are four quadrants, and they each represent a direction that we're invited to reflect on. So to the south, that's the direction of sunny exposure, right? You can go to the next couple slides there. So the south is the sun exposure. It kind of represents, you know, creativity, imagination, spontaneity, play. And so the reflection there is, you know, where do I feel my creativity being called forward? Like, what are some hobbies that really are life-giving to me? And then to the east, that's the direction of the dawn. Represents new beginnings. Right? So the reflection there is, what should I take hold of in a new way? What areas might need change or transformation? And then to the west, that's the direction of the setting sun, and it represents endings. So the reflection there is, you know, what maps no longer work? What needs to be released or let go? And then finally to the north, that represents the North Star. It's like the stabilizing force that kind of keeps all the other directions aligned. And the reflection there is, who loves and guides me? Right? Who are my spiritual guides? Who are my deep friends? And what story of grace animates me and brings clarity to my life? And I think as we reflect on what these directions represent, I think that's what allows our life to speak back to us. You know, our creative leanings tell us something. The experiences that we embrace or the experiences that we feel need to be let go, that tells us something. The people who we choose to give us wisdom and advice, that tells us something. And this might be how we let our life speak to us and begin to help us discern what our calling is, so that we can try to serve in an authentic way. And so the Lord called me before I was born. While I was in my mother's womb, he named me. And then we pick up in verse 4. But I said, I have labored in vain. I have spent my strength for nothing in vanity. Yet surely my cause is with the Lord, and my reward with my God. And then now the Lord says, who formed me in the womb to be his servant, to bring Jacob back to him, and that Israel might be gathered to him. For I am honored in the sight of the Lord, and my God has become my strength. And so the writer here, right, he's acknowledging that they've expended a lot of energy and strength and resources. And maybe it's because they're trying to fight the injustice and the oppression that they're dealing with, and they're trying to maybe create a new opportunity, a way out of this. But they've come to a point where their efforts seem pointless and meaningless. And that's when they're reminded that God has become their strength, right? That this work is not dependent on their power or abilities. And so for us, a life of service involves a movement away from serving out of our strength, out of our ego, and instead consenting to God's presence and action. You know, one of the frameworks that, you know, captures this process and this realization is the two halves of life that Rohr talks about. Some of you might be familiar with it. Where the first half of life, it's all about your ego, accomplishments. And it's not until you've exhausted all your strength, all your energy, all your resources, and you experience a crisis, or maybe you have a new revelation, it's not until that point that when your structures no longer work for you, when you can't put whatever life circumstances are and fit that into that structure, that's when you begin the transition into the second half of life. And, you know, it's not necessarily tied to age, right? There are people who grow into their old age, but they're still operating out of that first half of life framework. And there are other people who actually move into that second half of life much earlier in their life. But this is how we might describe each half. So the first half, right, it's focused on building that container, right? You're kind of building that structure, that external structure, trying to impress others with what you've built. It's about your ego. It's also characterized by dualistic thinking, right? The tribalism, the us versus them, either or. It's a lot of, you know, just being exclusive, trying to establish certainty. And then it's characterized by knowledge, trying to increase what we know. And then lastly, it's characterized by action, right? We're defined by what we do, by what we accomplish. It's a posture of needing to be seen and heard. And then we move into the second half of life, right? It's characterized by learning how to push that ego aside, right? Starting to tend to our souls, build some of that internal support. And then there's a non-dualistic thinking, right? The yes and, being able to understand that everything belongs, trying to be inclusive and more expansive, being comfortable with mystery instead of certainty. And then it's characterized by wisdom. So it's practicing discernment instead of accumulating knowledge. And then lastly, it's characterized by contemplation, right? We're defined by who we are. There's a posture of listening and silence, right? And that's how we consent to God's presence and action. And I think for many of us, myself included, right, we've mostly lived a life of service out of that first half of life structure. And that's where we all start. I mean, it's all about our ego. It's all about accomplishments. It's about having this seemingly endless supply of energy when we're young. And that pretty much describes our journey as a community. For me individually, when we first started Vox, when we started Space 12, you know, almost 12 years ago, just right after we started Vox, you know, we started Space 12 as a community center, just a couple blocks down from here, where we used to meet. And, you know, I managed that building renovation as well. So that's kind of my sweet spot. I can do one building renovation like every 10 years. It feels about right. And we definitely had naive idealism. We had a lot of youthful energy. And, you know, there are so many things that we thought we could help with or even fix, you know, trying to figure out ways to address the economic disparity in this neighborhood, trying to serve underprivileged kids, you know, trying to fix people's broken relationships. But that all really just led us on this path of burnout, both as a community and individually. I remember when, you know, Gideon went on his first sabbatical, because he was experiencing his version of burnout. You know, I was left to deal with some drama here in our community, and also some, you know, really difficult staffing situations. And I remember that summer was the first time I had an actual panic attack. Like, I remember it was in the middle of the afternoon, you know, sitting on my couch, and my hands just, like, wouldn't stop shaking. And we had expended all this energy. We had expended all our resources, actually to the detriment of ourselves. And, you know, I think all of us have come to that point somewhere in our lives where we realize the structures that we've built are no longer holding up and they're actually collapsing around us. And as painful and as challenging and difficult as that is, that's kind of the necessary step and process to move us into that second half of life. And that's why we've been so intentional here the last few years to explore together as a community what contemplation and what that practice looks like and what that means for us, to be intentional about tending to the soul and not just expending all our energy on building these external structures of our lives. Because contemplation is the practice of consenting to God. And so for us, maybe that is what we can try this week. You know, is maybe centering prayer, which is a practice, one practice of trying to consent to God's presence and action. And in doing that, we kind of continually remind ourselves to move out of that first half of life structure. And as we do that, maybe we can consider what serving would look like if we're in that second half of life framework. And I think that will help us serve in a more sustainable way. And then we close in verse 6. So God says, "It is too light a thing that you should be my servant to raise up the tribes of Jacob and to restore the survivors of Israel. I will give you as a light to the nations, that my salvation may reach to the end of the earth." And so here we see, you know, God's vision is expansive, right? It's not about becoming more insular or becoming more exclusive, but it's actually making the circle bigger, right? That healing and restoration is actually for everyone. And similar to the words Jesus left to his disciples, right? When he said that they would be witnesses to his life and his teachings, first to the people in their city of Jerusalem, and then to the region, and then to the rest of the world. So it's always been about including everyone. And the image that's used to describe their role is that they're supposed to be like light. And that's a meaningful and purposeful image, right? Because light's function really is just to reveal. Light doesn't make anything or doesn't do anything. It actually just reveals. And so for us, a life of service is an invitation to be like light, right? Just to reveal God's love to all people. You know, I grew up in a more fundamental church context. And so when we would read passages like this, where you're supposed to bring God's salvation to the end of the earth, right? We were taught that that was now our responsibility to go and make that happen, right? To go and convert others and other countries, to have them understand our Western evangelical understanding of God. And I don't think, you know, our responsibility is to convert or to convince as much as it is to just reveal. You know, one of the examples that I've learned this from is when I was doing chaplain work in the hospital, and my supervisor, right, she told me, she's like, "Waylon, your primary responsibility is just to understand what your patient's lens is, how they see God. It's not to convert or change that lens. That's not your job. But your job is simply to reveal, to draw attention to where God is by them using the lens they're already looking through." And I think that's our invitation to serve others. It's just by helping to reveal God's love and presence when it's sometimes hidden from others. And so let me close with this blessing from John O'Donohue. And I invite us to receive and hear this in the context of living a life of service. And so may the light of your soul guide you. May the light of your soul bless the work you do with the secret love and warmth of your heart. May you see in what you do the beauty of your own soul. May the sacredness of your work bring healing, light, and renewal to those who work with you and to those who see and receive your work. May your work never weary you. May it release within you wellsprings of refreshment, inspiration, and excitement. May you be present in what you do. May you never become lost in the bland absences. May the day never burden you. May dawn find you awake and alert, approaching your new day with dreams, possibilities, and promises. May evening find you gracious and fulfilled. May you go into the night blessed, sheltered, and protected. And may your soul calm, console, and renew you. And we ask all this in the presence of the Father, in the service of the Son, and the discernment of the Spirit. Amen.